There are tens of thousands of Puerto Ricans who fled the island after Hurricane Maria. There are hundreds of thousands of people displaced by Cyclone Idai in southern Africa. Just two recent examples of people turned into climate refugees. It is not an official legal designation, but David Wallace Wells estimates there are about 10 to 20 million people in the world today who are displaced because of climate change. Wallace Wells is the author of the book, The Uninhabitable Earth, Life After Warming, and he warns that the number of people forced from their homes by consequences of climate change will only increase.
Well, I think the most dramatic threat when it comes to climate refugees is actually just direct heat. As soon as 2050, it's expected that some of the biggest cities in South Asia and the Middle East are going to become so hot that it will be impossible to move around outside, certainly work outside, without suffering a risk of heat stroke and possibly death. And that means that cities that today are home to 10, 12, 15 million people may become functionally unlivable, at least in summer, just a few decades from now. The UN projects that by 2050, in part because of these direct heat effects, in part because of flooding, we're almost certain to see at least 200 million climate refugees. That is a level of chaos, of human chaos, that we have really no precedent for in human history.
So how can countries plan for this? I mean, more importantly, given the hostility to refugees in many countries, will they plan for this?
Climate change is not just a matter of science and what the climate system will do. It's also a matter of how we'll respond and how our lives and our civilizations will be shaped by these forces. I think that carbon will be at the very center of geopolitics very quickly, so that if you imagine, you know, the new international order that was built after World War II being built on the principle of human rights and peace and prosperity. That order didn't always honor those values, but they were the stated goals of basically all international cooperation. I think as soon as a decade from now, that will be the case with climate. All of our trade agreements will deal with carbon. We'll perhaps start to see sanctions imposed on countries who are behaving poorly, and possibly even military intervention to deal with nations who are behaving really irresponsibly. And I know that sounds so wild to contemplate, but if you had told a European in 1915 that we'd be fighting wars over human rights as soon as three or four decades down the line, they would have laughed at you too.
Do you think authoritarians will be given a pass on human rights by the world community if they accept climate refugees and take climate change seriously?
And I think that it's possible that we see more authoritarianism in parts of the world as a way of dealing with climate, and that we turn a blind eye to people who are behaving poorly towards their own citizens if they're doing other things that we value, in the same way that we've done in the past with human rights. And I think ultimately China will be the biggest test case of this. Xi Jinping is a man who has jailed probably several million Muslims in Xinjiang and has built a quite intense surveillance state, but at the same time has been making much more dramatic commitments, at least at the rhetorical level, to climate action and green energy. We will see how the West responds to those different impulses.
We're speaking with David Wallace Wells, the author of The Uninhabitable Earth. Even a 2-degree rise, experts say, will be catastrophic, and it's easy to imagine massive chaos after human displacement. When you talk about people leaving, are you considering the people who have means, leaving many poor people to try and survive in unlivable conditions?
Well, that's always the problem. I mean, the people who are already well off will find ways to endure, and those who have less will suffer most. Unfortunately, the impacts of climate change are distributed in that way too, such that the global south is already being hit much harder than the global north. Even though climate change is a universal, all-encompassing system, it will punish us unequally. If we continue on the track we're on, there'll be parts of the world that could be hit by 6 climate-driven natural disasters at once.
Wow.
Globally, we could have agricultural yields that are about half as bountiful as the ones that we have today. We'd probably be trying to feed about 50% more people. Again, it's the wealthy nations of the world that will probably find a way to navigate around those challenges. Unfortunately, I think we're already seeing that the wealthy of the world's first instinct is to sort of turn their back on the suffering of the global south, as we're seeing with that horrible weather event in Mozambique, which entirely wiped out a city of 500,000 people.
So you've suggested that science fiction and dystopian fiction might actually have some lessons for us on how to deal with all this, or at least how to think about all this. What is the connection from The Hunger Games to, like, surviving this?
Well, I hope that we don't get all the way to that kind of a scenario, but I think it is important.
Yeah, that's pretty drastic.
I think it's a useful reminder that we will almost certainly endure, and I think that it's up to us to design that future, I think most importantly by deciding how we manage carbon emissions, because by far the most important driver of how warm it's going to get is how much carbon we're putting into the atmosphere. So it is up to us to write the future acts of this story. And when we think about some of these horrifying impacts that we could be dealing with at 3, 4, 5 degrees of warming, they can seem overwhelming, they can seem paralyzing, but ultimately they're a reminder of how much power we retain over the climate. I don't think that this is a binary thing where either we're going to end up in a utopia or a dystopia. I think almost certainly, as is always the case, we're going to end up somewhere in between. We can choose to really redraw and reorient our politics to address this issue head on as the overwhelming, all-encompassing, and preeminent challenge of our time, which frankly, it is. We need a politics that treats it that way.
It is a fascinating and urgent discussion. David Wallace Wells, author of The Uninhabitable Earth, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.